On this episode of Technically Leadership, I'm joined by Daniel Ward to get a sneak preview of his talk on getting the entire team to speak up and balancing the quiet engineers with the more talkative ones. We discuss how to encourage participation in meetings, why psychological safety matters, how pair programming helps drive more engagement, and even talk some about how being a staff engineer or consultant parachuting into a team can help surface some of these issues. Let's get to it. All right. And you would have heard the intro by now, but I would love to welcome our guest this round, Daniel Ward, to Technically Leadership. Daniel, is there anything you want to say before we kind of dig in on this topic today? Anything you want to add to your intro, which is, you know, talking about what we will be talking about and a little bit about you?
Yeah, I guess I can just introduce myself. So I'm Daniel Ward. I am a primarily developer background, but past 5-6 years or so, I've also been acting as a consultant slash coach, technical coach, agile process, all these other buzzwords. Yeah. and mostly I am in the .NET space, but not only. Actually, where I'm at right now, they're not using .NET.
Oh boy.
But I still use it on a bunch of personal stuff. I'm a Microsoft MVP in .NET. I co-organize the .NET user group down in San Antonio and Austin. Yeah.
So
work for Lean Techniques, consultancy out of Des Moines, Iowa.
All right. Well, but there's a big topic that we're covering today. And
yeah,
I think the bigger thing to me is that you're going to be a speaker here at DevOps Days Austin in Austin.
Yeah.
In like May 1st, May 2nd. We don't have the schedule out yet, but you're coming to talk on a really interesting topic, and I couldn't help myself. I had to ask if you would come on and talk about it. So what was your topic again? You want to tell everybody about it?
Yeah. So the title, which I think is catchy. I'm not sure.
It's really good. It's a good title. I like it.
Good. Good. hearing and being heard, getting the entire team to speak. So pretty much what it says on the card, I think, getting people who don't speak as much to speak up, and getting people who maybe speak too much to give some more space for the more quiet people.
Yeah. Yeah. It sounded like a really interesting talk when I saw it come across our CFP. So I definitely wanted to dig in on it with you. Today has been a day. So we are all talking at once. Generally, I'd say that this is probably a pretty common thing with a lot of engineering teams and technical teams, that you get like those handful of people that are always the ones to speak up, and then the rest of the team just listen. What do you think is probably the most common reason people don't speak up?
Oh man, most common, that's hard to say. I think just because they don't have to. I think probably naturally, some people lean more towards, they're going to talk more. And naturally, some people lean more towards, they're going to be more quiet. Mm-hmm. And if you just let everything else be equal, that's how it's going to play out, I think, without intentionally working against that.
Yeah.
And I totally agree. Like as a consultant, I jump around to different teams more often than I did when I was a dev, non-consultant dev. And that's kind of something I've noticed with maybe every single team I've been on, is that there's, you know, the few people, as a dev, I would lean more on the quiet side, I think. I think that's probably pretty common. There's always a few people who you like hardly ever hear from, and a few people who are like, you know, probably the senior people who are kind of dominating every meeting.
Right.
That makes sense. And I actually kind of got called out on it once. So then I feel like I swung too far in the other direction and then kind of went back, and I hope I'm in a middle spot now.
We all hope that we've improved. We never know if we have until someone tells us.
I still necessarily wouldn't call myself an expert at doing these things myself.
Well, but that's part of the fun, is trying to learn it as you're going.
Yeah, so, always trying to keep it in mind.
So obviously, it's a little hard to see it when you're inside of the team. But now, like you said, now that you've been hopping around from team to team, you're starting to notice it more. What kind of drove you to write this talk? What what kind of came up in your mind to say, you know what, I need to talk about this because people get stuck on this in leadership positions?
So originally it was actually because I wanted to do a talk for a different DevOps Days, for DevOps Days Des Moines. Mm-hmm. And for whatever reason, I was looking up DORA stuff. I don't know if I was planning on talking about that or if it was coincidence I was looking it up, but I was looking up DORA stuff at the time. And one of the things they said was nothing really made sense until we found this research from like 2007 or something from Anita Woolley. And that's what like the DORA research is built on. And her stuff mm-hmm. is basically like, we have IQ for individuals. Do we have that same measure for groups? Which they called collective intelligence. They said, we right. do have this. So that's kind of a lot of what the talk is built on. And I've always been interested in like psychology kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. Before I went into programming, I had actually always planned on going to med school. Like even after I graduated college, I planned on going to med school. And I was like, oh, psychiatry sounds interesting. So just like how social things work and how the human mind works, I just find kind of mm-hmm. interesting. So I just kind of kept digging more on it. And I did an Ignite talk on it. So.
And people were interested and they wanted to hear more.
Basically. Yeah. That I kind of wanted to do tech talks. And then this talk is the one that kept getting accepted over and over at conferences. I was like, dang it. But, well, I guess I'll take it. You know, I can't complain.
I mean, it's a very difficult thing as a leader to figure out, like, how do you make that space for other people to kind of fill in without making the people who do fill in space feel like they shouldn't, which I think is really what you're getting down to, is that making a welcoming space and encouraging more people to speak up without it being a bad thing if you speak up in a larger percentage of the time.
Yeah, absolutely. The whole psychological safety aspect, right?
Exactly.
And that's a big part of it. But even that, it's not all of it. Like it could be, because there's a million reasons people might not be speaking up. Like it could be burnout because the company culture is not good, right? It could be the team doesn't own the work. They just have everything passed down to them. So like why comment on anything? That could be part. So it could be like bigger than the team. It mm-hmm. could be a bunch of stuff that's like bigger than the team level. It might be with the whole org and it's not immediately obvious.
Do you find that as a consultant, you're able to pick those things out? Because we get staff engineers who maybe parachute in and out of teams and they maybe see this more often. How do you even approach that with a manager and say like, hey, did you know your team shows these patterns?
Yeah. I think I recognize them, but it may not be immediate. And when you spend 2 or 3 months with a team, things start to pop up. You get familiar with their way of working and you see things how they see things, I think. Mm-hmm. But it's hard to see things immediately, I would say. But for management, depends on the person. Everyone's different and everyone has their own motivations. But in my experience, what upper management usually cares about is numbers. Right. They have to report a bottom line to somebody above them in some way, most likely. So if you can, a lot of my job, I feel like, is just making things visible, exposing mm-hmm. stuff. So if you can do anything to show this way of working is making our cycle time take a week longer or something, you know, and that mm-hmm. translates into this value for the customers, that resonates usually a lot better than our engineers are sad, you know.
Yeah.
Maybe they're not jerks, but they just can't really connect with that, probably.
No. Yeah, or they can't show value, like you said.
Yeah.
If the numbers are the important thing upstream of where they are. That makes sense. So I guess I'm kind of curious. I don't want you to give away your talk, because I think I'm trying really, really hard not to like dig into all the really cool stuff I saw in the abstract in case that's your talk. But how do you view it? If you are leading a team and you're noticing that this is a thing, like what are your strategies? And, you know, preview the talk if you want to, or like skip something and say, I'm giving it at the talk. But like, what are the strategies for somebody to say like, hey, I'm noticing my team is doing this where there's like 2 people out of the 10 that are talking all the time? What do you do?
I'll say, first of all, it depends on what position you're in. So different stuff works better if you're the tech lead versus the PM versus the director, you know.
Right. Yeah. Right.
So I know this one might be a little controversial, but I think it's kind of a universal point that addresses almost everything in the talk is pair programming. Mm-hmm. Pair programming builds empathy with the people you're working with because you're actually with them throughout the day. And then you swap who you're with. A lot of times people don't speak up because they're new to the team or they're entry level and they don't know stuff. So they don't have much to comment on. So pairing with an expert person makes it so they know stuff. And plus, I think you have these informal mentorships that happen just kind of naturally in every industry. Happened to me. I'm guessing it happened to you. I think it's a common thing that when you start, you have a more senior person who just kind of teaches you stuff. They weren't like assigned to you or something, but it's just kind of how it played out. Mm-hmm. And I think when that happens, the senior person, like, they have some kind of a personal investment in the newer person. They want them to succeed, right? So they kind of make more space for them naturally. Sometimes you do need to be explicit with stuff. Like I said, I kind of got called out before in a retro. Like, there's a few people on the team and they're mm-hmm. like, you know, some of y'all don't speak up that much. You know, it was in a good way. It wasn't mean. It was like, I'd love to hear y'all's opinions more. And we were like, that's fair. You know, we feel like we agree with what everybody says usually. So we don't say anything, but we'll say that even if we just agree, we'll say that sounds good to me.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I've done the, not necessarily the pair programming, but one of the things that we used to do was a live code review, but it was done in mm-hmm. a very specific way where the person who authored the code did not get to actually share their screen. It was somebody else walking through the code and they got to answer questions about it, but then everybody was encouraged to ask questions and do different things. And so it was a really great way for folks who maybe didn't speak too much to get to learn the code base at the same time. Shout out to Jay who taught me that one.
That's interesting.
But yeah, so I could see that, and I could see it like a lot of the packet pushers folks that may be listening to this are more networky people. So even pairing mm-hmm. on how do you build the network or how do you put it together, they all probably know by now that I don't know that much about networking. So it's a long running joke at this point. But I'm sure there's other ways to do that that don't involve pair programming, but it's pairing. In general. So you're thinking more just building up the relationships on the team through one-on-one interactions, basically.
Yeah. Yeah. And I don't know if, you know, I only know my own industry. I don't know if network people have stand-ups and like the same ceremonies and stuff. But one thing that I found has helped is when you have things like anything with cards where people put in their thoughts or a little virtual post-it or something, mm-hmm. Just don't make them anonymous because that kind of gives a chance for people to just stay in the background because nobody owns any of it. And if you color code per name or like put people's name at the bottom and just make a bunch of them or something, then it's kind of obvious who's not participating, even if you don't call anybody out. Like everybody just sees it, you know?
Interesting.
And it's kind of like self-imposed social pressure, if that makes sense.
So some social pressure to put something on the board is what you're saying. So if there's like a retro,
it's like everybody can see I never do anything. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. That's an interesting way to do it.
I mean, from a more quiet person, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, sometimes it is easier to type it out than it is to be the one to raise your hand in a meeting. Or something like that. That makes sense. Okay. What about the person who's talking too much? I don't know if there really is like a too much. It's hard to kind of say that. But maybe they're taking up more airtime than other people. How do you address it with them? Like, obviously, I'm assuming the answer is the classic engineering. It depends.
Depends, yeah.
Of where you are. But what are your thoughts on that?
I'll give some specific examples, but that is what I was going to say. It depends. So same thing. It could be team stuff or it could be org level. Like you have companies who like encourage stuff about culture, competition and stuff. Okay. Mm-hmm. So that could lead to people never shutting up, right? Like over over participating so they look good, right?
Right.
So it could be encouragement from like upper management, but not necessarily. It could just be that's how they naturally are. It could be they don't even realize they're doing it, and nobody has told them. Right? It's hard to know. One of the teams I was on did before. I don't know if you've heard of. I think we called it the jellyfish rule, but
the jellyfish rule. No, I haven't heard that. I'm listening.
Yeah. So I might, or so I think that name came from this article, these two guys in the Harvard Business Review. But basically, if someone is like on a tangent and they're going on, you're like, dude, this is just stand up or something. Yeah. And just anybody can say jellyfish or another silly word. I think we used Elmo because it stood for enough. Let's move on.
Okay.
But it's basically, everybody understands that basically means like, hey, this is not the point of the meeting. We're kind of, yeah. But for some reason, when you say that word instead of this is too much, like people generally don't get offended. Like it's just safer. And it's kind of silly, right?
Yeah.
Elmo's good too, because there's like a ton of Elmo GIFs on Elmo Teams or whatever you use to post. Yeah.
Yeah.
And a teammate I had, they said back before COVID, when they were always in office, the way they did it was they had a dartboard and they all had darts. And like if someone was, or no, they had little guns with the foam darts.
Nerf
guns. And if someone was doing it, they shot the dartboard.
Oh, so, interesting. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've always heard it as the, like, and usually it's the team leader, the scrum master, or whoever is kind of running the meeting is like, hey, let's take this one offline. Hey, you know, this is a shorter meeting. I think that's a great conversation. Let's, you know, immortalize it in writing. Let's take that to like an email list. Let's take that to Slack. So usually there's some kind of like short code that I learned as like a team lead and in various scrum master type roles is the, hey, this is really important. Why don't we take this offline? And the thing is though, is that it actually is more perpetually online, I guess, because you're saying go take this to Slack or email rather than to in person.
Yeah.
But they always called it offline. But I kind of like the idea of something that's a little more fun, I guess you could say, something a little less.
Yeah, it really doesn't matter what the word is, just like everybody agrees on it. And
right.
Yeah.
Right.
That's also kind of like if the whole team talks about it, then it's always like in the back of everyone's minds that like someone can jellyfish me. Right. I better not. I better not go on too long.
I never thought that I'd hear that as a verb, but
yeah.
I guess I can kind of understand that. I like the idea. I like the idea. So this is almost the team rules of engagement or the team way of working, kind of writing that all out and discussing it ahead of time. That's a good idea. I like
it. Yeah. I think another thing with specifically with the people who talk a lot, sometimes that's because they're the only people who know about the thing. So that's knowledge silos, obviously. Which so
you want to break down.
Sometimes they're the only ones who can't speak on it, which is not a good thing either. But the solution there isn't to tell them to stop talking. It's to teach the rest of the team about that stuff.
Right. Yeah, that makes sense. Huh. So I want to get back to a topic that you brought up. And you said that sometimes there's other reasons why people aren't speaking up. There's other reasons why people aren't engaging. And you mentioned burnout, you mentioned different processes, you mentioned all sorts of different things. So obviously I'm mostly picking on your brain because you've been through a lot of different companies and you've been a consultant at different places. Do you find that it's a lot of the time it's something outside of the team, or do you think it's more intrinsic to the person? They're just quiet, or they're just new, or they're just whatever it is.
Yeah, I've definitely seen both. It's hard to say which one I see. I guess if I had to guess, it would be that it's more intrinsic, because I think that's just the case for devs specifically, is that they're typically more introverted people.
Right.
But I don't know that it's like heavily slanted one way or the other.
Gotcha. I mean, I will say that like a lot of the ops folks I used to work with, mostly it was you need to get them really annoyed at something or really passionate about something, and then they start talking, right? That's when the arguments start. And when the arguments start, it's fun. So, you know, maybe that's just ops, though. I don't know. I don't know if that's like a dev thing, too.
Yeah, I would agree with that. So, I just want to shout this article out where I got the jellyfish thing.
Yeah.
It is Harvard Business Review, The Right Way to Cut People Off in Meetings by Bob Frisch and Carrie Green.
Someone literally made an article about it. That's amazing. I love it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'll have to look for that. I will, for folks listening, I will try to put that in the show notes. We will find it and we will get the link and put it in the show notes. Fascinating. Okay. So I guess coming back to the more meta version of people are quiet though. So like a team is burnout or people are burnout from everything. Obviously, you want to deal with the underlying problem. Do you do you find that once people deal with that underlying problem, it gets better? Whether that's helping somebody with burnout, or maybe it's more along the lines of this got dumped on them from another team and it just is taking time.
I think so. And sometimes those are, sometimes burnout, in my experience, can be short-term or long-term. So sometimes burnout is just like, I don't know if burnout would be the right word for this, but I'm going to use it. Like, I've been on camera all day. I just need a break. And like, yeah, you know.
Exactly.
Yeah. And there are some places that he's got to be on camera. And I think teams work better when they're on camera, personally. But I get it. I'm not going to make people be on camera all day, right? Yeah. Like, that could be taxing for some people.
Right.
And there's longer term stuff, right? Like with the more too much work.
Yeah.
And like team is just overloaded. Lines. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I'll be honest, the stuff that comes from higher levels is usually much harder to fix.
Right.
Because you have to convince a C-level person. And as consultants, if you can't convince the C-level person to change things, it's very hard to change the way of working. Because ultimately, right, they're going to tell you and the teams what they can and can't do.
Right.
I had a thought, and I lost it here. I think you were going on with something. Okay.
No, I mean,
see, I did. I went on a tangent. And I missed my other tangent.
Hey, you're okay. I mean, that's kind of how things work. I'd say that even as somebody working in a company, whether you're a consultant or not, having to convince that C-level or even a director, a VP, whoever it might be, that you need to change what you're doing or you need to slow down the release cycle or whatever it is, like, that's probably not within your purview unless you are the direct report to that director.
Right.
C-level. I mean, you can manage up only so much and try to do that.
Yeah.
So,
and that's why I say, like, a lot of my job is making stuff visible. Like, I can't tell my manager what to do, but I can expose, like, hey, we changed this way of working and now we have doubled the defects of last quarter.
Yep.
Something like that.
Numbers like, say something.
That matters.
Yeah. Statistics say something.
I do remember the other thing now. So yeah. I did learn there's burnout, right? There is kind of the inverse of that. There is bore out, which is really a real thing. It has like a Wikipedia page. And it's basically like the effect is similar, that you kind of shut down mentally, but the cause is sort of the opposite. It's instead of getting overloaded, you either don't have enough or it's just very boring, mundane, like repetitive work, takes no brain power really.
Mm-hmm.
And or like teams don't really own the work. Like I said before, like it just gets passed down. You don't know the customer. You don't know why you're doing it. You might not even see the finished product. Ultimately, it's just like, churn this out, get the requirements done. That's it. You know?
Yeah.
It's not really interesting. You're not invested as much.
So I guess coming down to the root of it, a lot of it is just that investment. When it's more the meta problem, it's the investment of the person in seeing it done, whether it's they want to be invested.
I would agree. That's
they find
a lot of
interesting.
It.
Yeah. Oh, you think even if they're just quiet in general, like I think they're still invested, right? Or maybe this is the argument discussion. I like being in an argument about X or Y or Z. Therefore, I'm highly invested. Therefore, I'm going to speak up.
Yeah. I mean, I think this can be it. Mm-hmm. Right. Like there's, it's hard. One of the things I talk about in the talk is that, like, hey, here's a bunch of things, but none of them are silver bullets, really. And I say it's a laundry list, not a checklist. So like checklist is like, I do all these things before I say it's done. A laundry list is like, I can kind of pick the things to get done.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And some of them might not apply. It just, mm-hmm. yeah, I think that can be it though, for sure.
That makes sense.
And one of the things we tell teams frequently is to actually talk, if possible, a lot easier for internal stuff, actually talk to the people who are using the thing you're making. Mm-hmm. And I think that works super well both ways. Because a lot of time it's just like the product owner or manager who does that. Not that they shouldn't, but if devs come along, I know your audience might be a little different, but it probably still applies at some level, whatever they do.
Yeah.
For the customer, it's like, oh, wow, I'm talking to the actual person who made this thing.
Right.
And for the dev, it's like, I'm not just making a ticket. I know this person's acting like I'm helping Bob with this problem he's been having, like that he told me in a conversation.
Right.
And it just means more. It's more fun, I guess, speaking from experience.
Yeah.
I think that matters.
Kind of putting that person to something, it just makes it more important.
Oh, yeah.
Versus just checking something off on your Jira board, moving a card from here to here. You know, some of us really get a rise out of that, but not all of us.
Right. Even without any like logical reason that should work anyway, I think that's just kind of how our brains are wired. When you tie a person to the thing,
it's
much more meaningful when you have a face to it. It's hard to be like, because then you have empathy, like probably whether you want to or not. It's just how most people's brain works, I think. Yeah. And it's a lot harder. I'll say it's a lot easier. How about that? It's a lot easier to get mad at this team that keeps asking for stuff all the time instead of getting mad at Bob because he can't deliver to his manager and we're hurting that part.
Right. That makes sense. So kind of related to this, let's say that you'd have a more junior engineer who doesn't really know much. And obviously they're being quiet because they don't know. Do you find that actually helps them feel more comfortable asking questions? Because I think that's one of the hardest things for a junior engineer to do is to go be vulnerable, be wrong. It's hard for everybody. I shouldn't say that it's just junior engineers, but I feel like juniors have to deal with it more often because they have to ask a lot more questions. So do you think that giving them that incentive of this is the person that you're talking to, that you're trying to help?
For sure. And I think thinking back to when I had started, what motivated me, what still motivates me, is having responsibility. Mm-hmm. So I kind of struggled until I finally started getting invited to meetings and stuff and talking with other teams and like knowing the work I'm doing is part of the main stuff, quote unquote. Yeah. And then like you want to know you're actually making a difference there, right?
Right.
And I'm going to mention pairing. And if you do pairing, you don't really need a ramp up period. You just start working with one of the experts. The experts can hold their hand and like make sure they don't horribly break everything, but they can still make minor mistakes, right? Because the expert knows what's minor.
Yeah, exactly.
And they can just work on the same thing the expert does. Maybe not have the same level of contribution, but that's expected. Right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes sense.
And the same, like psychological safety again.
That's what I was going to say. This is all psychological safety.
I totally understand, like, I don't want to ask this question. Everybody else knows it.
Yeah.
That, I think on my part, that's self-imposed.
So
part of it is like making sure people feel okay asking stupid questions, quote unquote.
Yeah. I admit, I usually say, you know, that there are no stupid questions. There's only, you know, whatever you want to say then after that. I usually say there are no stupid questions. There's only smart answers. So you get the choice. That's usually how I put it. But I don't know. I think learning out in the open is a skill that you have to learn.
Oh, yeah.
And it's a very difficult one to do. Now, as a developer advocate, in the past bunch of jobs that I've had to be that person. And I have to learn out in the open and completely be wrong. And so I've exercised that muscle a lot, but I understand that a lot of people haven't. So that's, it's intimidating. And so I guess that's part
of
it.
Yeah, and I think you definitely have to be comfortable with the people. Yeah. Like if it takes a new person a few months for this to happen, I'm totally okay with that. I don't expect them to, you know, hit the ground running with being active and stuff. I get it.
Yeah, I think like when I read about your talk, I thought a lot about the fact that this is more for the teams that are, you know, the manager that has such a quiet team that they never really hear from them when they're doing a meeting. It's just lots of status updates and then just quiet. That's kind of what I got from your abstract and your talk was, how do you deal with that situation? Or how do you deal with like the senior engineer being the only one talking and like dictating? Yeah. That's what you're trying to solve here. Am I kind of reading that right?
Yeah. Until you're correct. That and the opposite of, well, you kind of mentioned the senior engineers.
Yeah.
Doing all the talking. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, hopefully you don't end up with the complete opposite where it's all the junior engineers asking questions and no one feels like answering them. That also is not.
No, I don't think I've ever seen it happen. But
I think we all just have a bone in our body that just wants to say like, hey, I want to help you. I want to answer that question.
Yeah.
Whether it's, I like teaching. Yeah, whether it's I like the teaching part or I hate finding out someone's wrong or I don't want to deal with your bug that you introduced because I didn't answer this question the first time. One of them is like the reason why we all answer. pick your poison. But
yeah. And to go back what I said before, I would actually say it's probably a better thing if a new person joins a team and they don't participate like immediately.
Yeah.
Because I think no matter what group you're in, if it's like social, like a friend group, if it's something with work, if you're joining a new group of humans and you try to change how stuff works right as you join, people are not going to like you.
Oh, yeah. That's
just how it works. Even if you're correct, the way people think is like, who do you think you are? You don't even know how we work yet, you know?
Right. Yeah.
And there is some validity to that, even if you are right in what your corrections are.
Right.
And so I think it's kind of best to observe for maybe not forever, maybe 2 or 3 months. And then,
yeah, you've got a lot of practice with that, I would imagine, where you kind of have to, I mean, you have a limited time that you're there, let's be honest, but at the same time, you know, you're coming in, you need to take a little bit of time to observe before you say something.
Oh yeah. There is I think it's from the 80s, this book called Secrets of Consulting. Huh. By Gerald Weinberg. And it's basically just a bunch of, he calls them like rules and laws and gives them silly names.
Of course.
It's just like one bullet point after the other, kind of, it's almost stream of consciousness. But one of them is the 10% rule, he calls it. And it's basically don't change more than 10% at a time. Because then you can actually make people, it's for several reasons. You can make people look bad because then their manager can go, well, how come you struggled this thing for 3 years? And this guy came in a few months ago and he's fixed it already. Like,
right.
And then all of a sudden you're the guy who hired you in the first place is fired. Or the same, like they can get mad at you. You're like, you're trying to change half of how we work. And you just got like, try to learn with us a little bit first, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So that can feel really bad as a consultant. Cause you're like, oh, I've seen this problem before. And I think I'm almost certain I know how to fix this for them and make their life easier. But you kind of have to hold your tongue a little bit. You might be wrong too.
Yeah.
Sometimes you really do need to observe longer.
Well, I mean, this isn't just consulting. We talk about this. Martin Smith, in my very first episode, Martin Smith talked about as a staff engineer, like principal staff engineer at the company he's at, he gets parachuted into teams to go fix a problem. He's the fixer. And when you get that, you're coming in and you have to balance that discussion of, I have to work with these people someday in the future. It's a little different than consulting in that you're already embedded in the company and these people may have seen you before, but suddenly you have to come in and fix something, but you have to make it so that they're comfortable doing it. And then you have to leave and you may have to hear about what it did, which.
Right. Yeah. Right. So that's the other thing we have to keep in mind. And I think you're right. Like consulting is really just convincing people to change how they're working a lot. I think honestly, one of the big advantages of being a consultant is not anything you are or do. It's just the fact that you're a neutral party that was brought in. It's like, you're not the manager that the C-level person might not like. It's you're this consultant, and because you're a consultant, you must be an expert, right? You know what you're talking about. So you sometimes have some sway just by virtue of the position you're coming in as, whether that's fair or not. But
well, I mean, I admit at one company I did this where people weren't listening to my suggestions on trying to fix something. So I brought in somebody I knew was a good consultant who would have told the same things. And I let them say it. And suddenly, magically, everything changed.
And you're like, I guess as long as it gets done. Well,
I look at it that way, but also, you know, hey, if they want to spend extra money, go ahead. Sure.
Yeah.
Why not?
Honestly, that can be a CYA for some people too. It's like, we even hired this guy. He is like the top of his field and we still couldn't fix it. Right.
Yeah.
So it's, yeah.
That's fair.
But that's another thing is I think ultimately, if I'm going into a team like parachuting and whatever, I'm going to leave relatively short term. They're the ones who are going to have to live with the problem and whatever solution I gave. Mm-hmm. So I try not to like suggest or force stuff. I kind of try to, if possible, let the teams figure it out on their own. And if I'm right, then the problem I thought will be the right one anyway. And if I'm wrong, then I didn't look as stupid, but I kind of try to just lead them in the right direction. Right. You know, and I learned something if I'm wrong.
So here's an interesting question. As you end up coming in to, usually you are coming in to fix a problem, I would imagine. You're parachuting. Do you find that once you're done, do you find that teams are more talkative? Because either the problem that they've been dealing with have gotten fixed, and so they're feeling less put upon, or all the pair programming that you're doing to try to share knowledge has caused that change? You find that?
I think so. It's hard. I mean, it's hard to pinpoint a reason why, I guess, if you're trying a ton of stuff at the same time. In my opinion, pair programming is a big part of it because we do so much of it when we consult and we just become very familiar with the team members very fast. Like we become friends with them, you know, because we're working with them all day.
Yeah.
So I think that that's a big part of it. But also another big part of it is does the team continue to do that after we leave? And I don't know the answer to that. That'd be another big indicator. And I don't usually get the answer to that, unfortunately. Yeah. But
unless they call you up again in a month and say, hey, come back and fix this part. But I imagine that's not very common.
Because they can say like, wow, Daniel was awesome. But then if everything falls apart when I leave, that means I was doing too much for them. You know, they weren't, like they didn't actually learn.
I guess it's just interesting to get this outside perspective almost on what these teams are like and how things change as you go. And of course, I know that there are staff engineers and staff plus, I guess I should say, who are listening to this, who are the parachuters who come in to fix. I call them smoke jumpers. You know, you're coming in, there's a sign of a fire, but where's the fire? You need to go put it out now. You know, it's you get a very different perspective on leadership inside of a team when you're coming in and you're just trying to affect a change, whatever it is. So anyway, I thought this was a really interesting topic. I'm really looking forward to your talk at DevOps Days Austin.
I was going to say the good thing about having this is you don't actually have to come to it now because I think I've given
come to DevOps Days Austin. 70%
of the content. So.
No, I'm looking forward to it. So. I plan to sneak away from wherever I'm supposed to be to stand in the back and listen. We'll see if I can make it. So
awesome.
As an organizer, I get stuck. So this was my opportunity to come and pick your brain before as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. But I am aware that we are getting close to time. So I want to give you a chance that if there's any last thoughts, as well as like anything you want to plug, this is your time, like the Hot Ones classic, you know, roll out the red carpet, this camera. No, I'm just kidding. But that kind of thing. Is there anything you want to kind of share with people? Last thoughts you want to give them? Anything like that?
I don't have like a ton of stuff to promote, I guess. I have a website, which is danandacan.com, which is mostly...
danandacan.com. I love
it. Which is mostly a technical blog with mostly .NET stuff. Yeah, I didn't want just like danielward.com. It's like, well, that's boring, and a ton of people have the name Daniel and Ward, so I'm probably not going to be very easy to find. But and Tendercam's kind of fun, which actually somebody had that too on YouTube. It's like some guy who lives out of his RV or something.
Oh, wow.
So like, okay, go, I just
so as you're listening, don't go look for the guy in the RV. Go look for the technical blog. All right, good to know. Good to know.
We'll have this. Like, I hope I'm different enough from that to not be confused.
We don't know when you're dealing with certain things. It might be the same.
Right. Yeah. Hopefully there's not enough overlap there.
Oh boy.
The company I work for, leantechniques.com, if any of the consulting stuff sounded cool, or I do it solo on the side as well.
Yeah. So. Or if you want to, I guess, ask about what it's like to take up consulting work. Maybe that's also a conversation
you
can catch up with on the social.
Yeah. And if you are down here, you can check out the San Antonio and or the Austin.net user group.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm sure everybody would be happy to have you. And obviously, if you want to come watch the talk, DevOps Days Austin, devopsdays.org/Austin this year.
Come to DevOps Days Austin.
It's come meet Daniel. It'll be great. Come join us for open spaces and all those wonderful things. But that being said, thank you so much for coming on with me today. We're going to record our hot take, which will be for those of you who listened since the beginning of Technically Leadership, you will get a chance to get Daniel's hot take on leadership later this season. But on that note, thank you, Daniel, so much for joining me today. I'm really happy to
have you. It was awesome. Thank you for having me and asking me to come on.
I'm really excited we could. All right. Tell everybody bye.
All right. Bye. Thanks. Yeah.